Thank you, Bill, for the introduction. And let me start by thanking the Corporate Council for this opportunity to have a dialogue with you. My main purpose for being here today is for two things. One is to encourage direct foreign investment as well as domestic investment in African agriculture. And the other is to encourage you to engage more in public-private partnerships. Public-private partnerships, they may be with USAID. They might also be with the MCC. I'm going to talk about a particular part of our agriculture portfolio that is emerging. As you're all aware, the world's in the midst of a global food crisis, unlike any other food crisis. And for the poorest 1 billion living on just a dollar a day, very high food prices often mean stark choices between do I buy food, do I take a child for health care, do I pay for school fees. This is a part of our global population that is already spending more than half of their income on food. And in Africa, the very poor spend 70% of their income on food. Now, this current food crisis is the result of some fundamental imbalances between supply and demand, and those imbalances between supply and demand are primarily in major food staples. So addressing the imbalances offers some opportunities for private investment to transform and help modernize African agricultural systems. And it is about what we are doing and looking at staple food crops that I'm going to talk about. Part of our response, the U.S. government's response to the food crisis, began on May 1st when President Bush requested of Congress to provide an additional $620 million in new funding to address the humanitarian aspects of the food crisis. But he also requested $150 million new dollars for longer-term agricultural solutions. Recognizing that the high food prices have had a disproportionately large impact on Africa, we're proposing to focus this initial tranche of additional agricultural long-term development assistance on Africa. And I might point out to the minister from Mozambique, we're looking strongly at setting 13% of this amount, some $20 million, aside to look at science and technology research as it relates to staple food crops among a host of areas, and I'll get into the areas in a minute. In focusing that agricultural development effort in Africa, we're supporting those countries that have put in place a supportive policy environment and a comprehensive investment plan to increase agricultural growth under the AU-NEPAD's Comprehensive African Agricultural Development Program, or CADA. In short, our desire is to focus on countries that have had the potential to increase production and marketing of food staples and are committed to supporting their agricultural sectors, including creating the policy conditions to help private sector investment in agriculture expand and help the sector flourish. Now, normally when we talk to corporate counsel, we talk about things like flowers. We talk about things like green beans for the European market. We talk a lot about coffee, tea, cocoa. So we tend to talk about either high-value crops intended for export or traditional export crops. And while we will continue our efforts with those, and they are critically important, our research has shown us that real growth and transformation of African agriculture will come from integrated investments along the entire value chain of key food staples, including the livestock for meat and milk sector. These value chains serve both growth and food security objectives. And to give you an example, I'll draw from one of the sessions that I passed through this morning, Bill's session, where as he talked about cocoa farmers, he pointed out that on the traditional small-scale cocoa farm, 13% of the productivity on that farm is cocoa. 65% of the productivity on that very same farm is staple food crops. And that's one of the reasons that we're looking at staple food crops. I don't need to tell this group the importance of food or food-related industries in the world. It's the largest industry in the world, and that's also true of Africa. African domestic demand for food staples is about $50 billion a year, and this figure is projected to double by 2015. Now, it is true that only a part of that output is actually sold in markets because a lot of that is consumed on farms. However, when we look at Africa, it is also the most rapidly urbanizing continent, and therefore there will be a continued shift away from direct growing or a subsistence element to agriculture more to a marketed aspect of agriculture. Since Africa currently imports 25% of grain products, particularly maize, rice, and wheat, domestic production of those staples could potentially displace imports. In other words, food markets, domestic and regional, should be strengthened, and this means strengthening trade, transport corridors, and comprehensive value chain development. The countries that we will be targeting with this new money should have the capacity to do several things. They should be able to rapidly increase staple food supply within their own borders and potentially in surrounding countries through expanded trade. They should be able to leverage significant investments from other sources, including the private sector. They should ensure a rapid supply response due to open market policies and trade incentives, and should have the greatest impact on reducing prevailing high levels of poverty. I believe we need a comprehensive and integrated approach to make food more affordable and available. Such an approach will do three things that also supply either an incentive or opportunities for foreign and domestic private investment. The first of these is promoting sound market-based principles. And to give you some example of what we're looking at here, here it is our desire to help regional organizations establish some commonality. That could be common seed laws to allow for the free flow and trade of improved seeds. In one case, we're working with a regional organization to look at common biosafety laws that would allow the movement of some genetically modified product through their areas. And also, our desire is to provide technical assistance to these communities to help them simply with the implementation of CADA. We think that that is going to help provide some incentive for private business because we think that that's going to increase market size. And certainly in Africa, one of the impediments to investing is that one often faces 13 countries that are small countries. When they have some common practices, they can become one market and provide greater incentive for investment. The second area is in the area of increasing agricultural productivity. And it is our desire, first and foremost, to deploy available science and technology, increase access to new technologies, and take the impact of research and actually begin to get that onto farms. We also very much want to work on increasing capacity for private sector seed and fertilizer industry, two big areas of inputs that are necessary if there's going to be a change in productivity. We're going to look a little bit more at enhanced irrigation, and we're going to look much more significantly at agro-processing capacity. The third area that we want to look at is alleviating transport, distribution, and supply chain bottlenecks. So we're going to look, we've started with a look at 25 transportation corridors that exist in Africa. We will probably work that down to initially work on three or four corridors. But we think that those transportation corridors are critically important for the movement of staple crops from surplus producing areas to areas of consumption. You know, we have tended to face in the past, particularly in staple crops, the problem of having an area increase greatly in their productivity, but not be able to move the crop away from that area so the price collapses. It is our hope that combining these two things, that we will be able to help with the movement from surplus producing to areas that need to consume. Support for the agricultural value chain development. In this area, besides looking at processing, we also will be looking at cold chain storage, the linking of cold chain and other storage to processing, and linking those two directly to transportation. Currently in post-harvest for many staples, there are many countries that lose up to 40% of what is produced. The desire is to eliminate that and allow that to take place in ways that price incentives will draw more of the staple crop production through the system to consumers, with a hope that producers will receive more, but consumers will also be able to pay less because we've increased some of the efficiencies through that movement. The last thing in that area we'll look at is increasing access to capital. In particular, as we look at small and medium enterprises in that increasing access to capital, one of the issues that we want to take on, we have increasingly noticed that as capital has become more available, one of the main problems for small and medium enterprises has been their ability to actually package what would be their portfolio to present to someone who has capital available. That's both for loans. That also is true in cases where there are enterprises that are looking for joint ventures and looking for direct investment. So that's an area that we hope to take up more seriously. The result of all of this is that we hope on the agricultural side of the agenda to see African production of food staples and the markets for these staples to significantly increase so that African economies become more resilient. There are two things I should point out. First, we don't look at this as business as usual. And second, and I think this is critically important for this group, we don't look at this as another iteration of the Green Revolution as the Green Revolution took place in Asia. If you'll recall, the Green Revolution, when it took place in Asia, was really a public sector-based change in agriculture. And we very much believe that in the African case, the only thing that is going to transform this agriculture is strong private sector participation. So we have tended, when people say to us, oh, this is a green revolution for Africa, because of that basic tenet, to say to them, no, we don't really see it quite the same as green revolution as people have talked about green revolution in the past. We know that there are 15 African governments and that have identified the need for $1.2 billion in seed and fertilizer to respond to high food prices. If we look at the major food staple value chains, such as maize, rice, cassava, dairy, beef, poultry, we see huge investment potential along each value chain. In transportation business, in commercial seed systems, in fertilizer, in food processing, and in trade. We've already implemented a number of public-private partnerships. The West African Seed Alliance, which involves Pioneer Hybrid, Monsanto, Chem Seed, a local seed company, and the African Seed Trade Association. We will continue and, in fact, even expand some our public-private partnerships in things like sustainable tree crops programs, because we think that that fits in and works well with the staple producers. We formed numerous public-private alliances within Africa that link producers to technology, that link producers to markets and finance. And in 2007, under what we refer to as the President's Initiative to End Hunger in Africa, there were reported 580 such formed alliances. One of the areas that we need to look at more, and we're sort of figuring out how we do this, is in joint ventures. There are a variety of really exciting emerging, particularly in food processing. I'll give you an example. When I was in Zambia about 8 weeks ago, there's a Zambian group that has bought a old food processor. And they are processing everything from tomatoes to peanut butter. You see, there's tomatoes, peanut butter. There were at least four other crops that they're processing. What they are doing really is filling in for what was a market that was supplied by Zimbabwe. And so they are selling currently south to Zimbabwe, but they're also looking quite actively north to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. They, like many emerging businesses, could use an influx of capital and an influx of some expertise. I think that as we begin to look at that whole concept of joint venture, it provides some opportunities for those in this room. What we need to figure out is what the public sector role in carrying out such endeavors is. As I've indicated, there is opportunity to do a lot more, especially with you, the U.S. private sector. And I'm convinced that now is the time to encourage you particularly to invest in staple food crops. So with that, let me finish. Thank you for the opportunity, and I guess I'll have a few moments to take some questions.
Thank you, Franklin, and we'll have a few minutes now for some questions from the audience.
Now I don't need to present myself. I've done so. And I think it was nice. It was good to hear you talking, Franklin. I have just short questions. One in the area of fertilizers and the others and seeds. I'm not sure what are you thinking of. But before, congratulations for the 13%. I think it's good. It was good news. And we have to work and see what we can do and the impact we'll have afterwards. On fertilizer, the government of Mozambique is very much interested in promoting the private sector to bring in fertilizers because we believe this will help. But we have a small question. Is the production of fertilizers and the utilization. What experience that can be learned? Because you have to give to the small farmers, you have to give to the peasant on education component, on your new strategy, on your policy. Are you thinking on doing something for the promotion of the education component for the people to know that they get fertilized and make good use of them on short, medium, and long terms also? On seeds, we have a serious problem on seeds that I think maybe we could... The problem is you have the pre-basic and basic seeds, and in between you need the participation of the private sector and the public between the pre-basic and basic seeds. What is your thinking or your experience in terms of incentivizing to increase the number of the private sector will be interested on taking care of the production from the pre to the basic and put them on the market, linking with your last statement, the staple food? Thank you.
Well, quickly, I think that both seeds and fertilizer are ripe areas for private sector. I think that some things have to take place before that. I think that particularly seeds, even maybe a little more than fertilizer, one of the impediments has really been market size. So I think that the degree to which one looks at relevant technical systems and is able to have countries in Africa who have similar technical systems that would have require the same types of seeds to somehow come together, I think lowers the cost and increases the private sector's ability to participate in seeds. Fertilizer, I think, quite often has a lot more to do with technical ability to make use of fertilizer. And I think that one of the things that we have to look at strongly, we don't have answers to this. We do know the question of it. But one of the things that we have to look at more strongly is how, when new technologies are developed, and there are lots of new technologies out there. I mean, if you look at the Consultative Group for International Ag Research, I just have done emails with Bob Ziegler at the Rice Institute. They've got some exciting things going on in rice. Dennis is here from World Agroforestry. They have some exciting things going on. What we have to figure out is how we best help them move those from laboratories into fields. And as we move those from laboratories into fields, the three biggest things that we need probably to figure out how we're going to work on is seed selection and helping farmers understand why they are selecting seed, on fertilizer application, and the third is on water use. But that's something that we talk about a lot, and we know we have to do something about that, but that is going to help make the difference in productivity in agriculture.
Dr. Moore, just to repeat myself, that is an absolutely excellent speech you've just given there, and every single point that you've mentioned has hit home in terms of the activities that our company is undertaking in Ethiopia. Our company right now, just to touch on one of the points you mentioned, we are, as we speak, we are in the so-called high-value items. We produce flowers out of Kenya and Ethiopia. In fact, we are the largest rose growers. We happen to be the largest rose growers. I am proud of it. And all of it goes to Europe. But that's not why I'm here. The reason why I'm here is what we intend to do for the next 3 years is... we are looking to invest something like $500 million and trying to grow in excess of 300,000 hectares of staple food all in Ethiopia. And that exactly serves some of the points that you mentioned is to getting into staple foods for Africa is what's going to make it sustainable to meet the food requirements in Africa. And that's exactly what our company intends to do. And of course, along the way, we need a lot of infrastructure there in place. Some of it is there. And one thing that concerns us in this process of investment, and you've sort of answered that, is the food. You mentioned 25 corridors of getting food, moving food from the production areas to the consumption areas. And you've apparently identified three or four areas or three or four corridors that would maybe alleviate those situations. If I can get more information about that, that would make us feel a lot better. Because while we are keen to grow the food, and our area of concern that we have not addressed ourselves is how do we go about moving the food from the production areas to the consumption areas?
First, I would say that three or four corridors does not solve the problem. We have looked at 25 corridors based upon an assumption that, in fact, 70% of staple food production in Africa probably comes from 17 or 18 countries. And because of that, there obviously is a need to move some of that production around. For us immediately, it will depend upon how we enter into sub-regions in terms of supporting countries. What we would like to do is support the strongest staple food producers within a sub-region and know that we also are supporting transportation corridors in that same region that move that food around not only in those countries but to food deficit countries within that region. So we're going to have to settle the first question first and then come to the road question second. But I can't pass up making this comment on roses because Africans always talk to me about roses and their roses ending up in Europe. The reality is, and God knows Ethiopia has gone, if my memory serves me correct, 3 years ago from 50 million in roses to 2 years ago, 400 and some million in roses. I mean, you guys have expanded greatly. The reality is, while East Africa produces 40% of the roses in Europe, not all of those roses stay in Europe. You all are involved in a rose market. Part of the value chain for roses that come from Africa is that the buyers who buy them in the Netherlands. So a lot of your roses go into the Netherlands, and when the transportation is right, and if you take the transportation right from Nairobi, it comes out at night in Nairobi. It is actually traded next morning on the floor in the Netherlands. And by 11 o'clock, it's on a plane for the United States. So a lot of your roses actually do end up in the United States.
Great. We have another question over here.
Well, you know what? I hate to say this, but I started off with a few notes, and the couple times I had to pause, it's because I wrote notes on the notes and paid attention at three of the sessions that I went to, and some of the stuff was extemporaneous from the sessions that I went to. But I may be able to scratch out something that gives you a basic idea of what I said. Okay.
We have another question over here.
Yes. I'm Don Crane with the International Fertilizer Development Center. If we're going to get the productivity we want in food staples, that means we have to have a lot of investment at the farm level. And when I look around, the biggest problem I struggle with is how do we get working capital at the farm level? And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are in terms of how we get the working capital, access to credit, and overcoming risk aversion both by the farmers and by the lenders.
Well, I'm going to kind of duck out on this one a bit. And the way I'm going to duck out on this one a bit, the countries that we have looked at, particularly from the point of view of increasing productivity in staples, we're selecting from a list of, I would say, 16 countries. They are 16 countries that have done quite well in complying with CADAP in terms of their the investment of domestic resources into agriculture. That really is, in some ways, the key. And so when you say that that is a general problem, yes, it is a general problem. We think that it is probably a little less true in the countries that we're at least going to start this off with. And that is one of the criteria that we really are looking at, is if the country is going to be a lot more productive, then they're going to have some things right. It's not quite the MCC, but it's kind of that idea where what we are using as the basis for who has made the progress is an African piece, which is CADIP. In those countries, I can think of some schemes that have been put together where governments have looked at what needs to be available for investment. And I don't want to single out a particular government, but I have just looked at one that requires about $45 million of investment. Their belief is, if my memory is correct, that about $20 million of that investment will come from the farmers themselves. There must be another $15 million that will come from the central government's coffers, and it leaves them $10 million short, so they need foreign assistance to come in and help them in some way at $10 million. That's actually probably not so bad of a percentage if they really can marshal the government portion and the private farmer portion. But we're looking more at countries that aren't saying, you know, we need 80% of that to come from foreign assistance or from outside.
We have time for one final question in the back of the room here.
My name is Baba Dioum from Senegal. As a coordinator of the Conference of Ministers of Agriculture, Western Central Africa, but I am speaking under my responsibility of dealing with CADEP Pillar 2 as a lead institution. Let me just appreciate what I hear this evening. Really, as an African, we know now that our vision have a response here in the United States. Because all the questions you raise is under Pillar 2 in CADEP process. And really, we appreciate the way in which you put your response and your commitment by really pushing your private sector to come in Africa. Let me just raise one issue. In Africa, the private sector is weak. How we can strengthen the private sector to organize it and really to make a joint venture with your private sector? This is a big issue. The second one, as far as TEPL is concerned, what kind of regional project at the sub-regional level can we design to be sure that many countries around, a river or something like that, can handle a project altogether? Thank you.
Let me deal with the last part first. I think that really is in part determined by the commitment of those countries themselves. And I think that, to be quite honest, when we look at sub-regional organizations, that some have taken a long time to get themselves in order, but there are at least two that are pretty serious about looking at how they move a sub-region forward, as much as the individual countries are interested in how they move themselves forward. I think there's been dramatic progress in, mind you, this is my personal views. I think there's been dramatic progress in COMESA in that area, and I think there's been dramatic progress in ECOWAS in that area. So that is really dependent upon the Africans and the organization themselves. Now, your comment on the private sector. I mean, my view is that in my experience in Africa, for those things that Africans are quite serious about, the private sector is not weak. I'm not sure that there has been a policy framework that has encouraged the private sector particularly strongly in staple foods, which is why the strength of the private sector in Africa has moved to other areas where it is quite strong. I think that's changing rapidly. I think that part of the issue is that to get to scale requires a certain level of basic expertise, but it also requires the ability at some point in time to get someone to come in with capital injections and idea injections. And I think that some of that will take place through joint ventures, where African private sector has moved from point A sort of to point M, and can articulate what their successes are, but also what their problems are, and that as the environment within which they function becomes more friendly to private sector, that it will begin to attract private sector in joint ventures and in direct investment of wholly owned entities by either local private sector or international private sector.